Hey, it's Rebecca Smith from the KBIA Newsroom in Columbia, and it's time for Missouri Health Talks, a project where we listen in on Missourians' conversations about access to healthcare. This week we hear from Lonnie Kessler and Kimberly Ruiz, a couple from Moberly. Lonnie has intractable epilepsy and Kimberly is a disabled vet, and they both advocate for the legalization of medicinal marijuana in the state. Lonnie and Kimberly sat down recently at the Little Dixie Regional Library in Moberly and spoke about their relationship and about the additional complications that arise due to their healthcare needs. Here's Kimberly.
We met on St. Patrick's Day, and we immediately liked each other. Lonnie was attending Moberly Area Community College and had a poetry reading. And when I attended, I noticed that his name came up, but he was not up there doing his poetry at that time. So I knew something was wrong. I did know about his seizure history prior to this, but I had never witnessed one. And Lonnie was so surprised, I stuck around. I think he must have known at that time that there was something different about me, because it never even occurred to me that I should leave.
And it's so hard to find somebody who can relate and be able to understand the different illnesses that are there, especially epilepsy. They don't understand that it is more than just seizures. It is depression, it's medications, it's doctor's appointments, it's sore muscles. It goes so much further than just the seizures. And to have somebody who is there from the get-go is what a blessing that is. To have that reassurance that someone is going to be there for you. And
both of us having disabilities means that we had an automatic understanding a bit of each other's lives, what it required for maintenance of those lives, and the struggles involved. I think something that people don't think of often is we are not a unique couple. We cannot get married legally for the simple fact that we're both disabled, and it would take away our medical care that we can receive. When we have gone to try to get rescue medication, one dose, it's always been over $400 for one pill. So it is very difficult on us, though, as we're both Christians, to not be able to do this. We've married in the eyes of God, but we cannot get married in the eyes of man. But I truly believe that because of our own experiences with our disabilities, we have been able to communicate at a deeper level on our need and have an innate understanding of what is going on with the other person.
And it does affect our caretakers' lives. There's a focus on the patients, but there needs to be a focus on the caretakers as well, and the toll that it takes on them to treat their loved ones as well as to see what they're going through. As a patient, I don't just live this. Kimberly lives this with me.
I'm afraid each time that you're going to die. Every single time, while I'm dealing with you and trying to assist you during your seizure, that is one of the things, and I know you know, that that's one of my biggest worries, is that I'm not going to even get to say goodbye because you can't hear me. This is not fun. This is really hard. And instead of enjoying our lives, we're working so hard just to have lives to live.
That was Kimberly Ruiz and Lonnie Kessler speaking about how both of them having disabilities has influenced and strengthened their relationship. That's it for this week's Missouri Health Talks. Tune in next week for more conversations from throughout the state about health and access. I'm Rebecca Smith. Thanks for listening. Hey, it's Rebecca Smith from the KVIA Newsroom in Columbia, and it's time for Missouri Health Talks, a project where we listen in on Missourians' conversations about access to healthcare. This week we hear from Janice Evans and Devin Hersey. They both do HIV treatment and prevention work here in Missouri and across the country. We met this month at the Legislative Advocacy Day hosted by the Missouri HIV Justice Coalition, where they were both advocating for changes to Missouri's HIV criminalization laws. They spoke about some of the reasons HIV impacts communities of color at a higher rate. Here's Devin.
The CDC projects 1 in 2 black gay men will be living with HIV or will be diagnosed with HIV over the course of a lifetime. If that were happening to white people, regardless of sexual orientation, it would be unacceptable. we've been conditioned to feel that it's acceptable for Black people to be experiencing this level of disparity, because we associate Black people with sexual deviance, for one, and with disease. You know, given the history of the Tuskegee syphilis study, there became this implicit association with Black people with disease and with uncontrollable sexual urges.
And it really has very little or nothing to do with the sex. Very little to nothing to do with the sex. It's like
access to healthcare.
If you look at disease, period, no matter what the disease is in the African American or communities of color, it's always a bump up or two or three or four or five. It's always that. So now HIV would not be anything any different. If you're not taking care of high blood pressure, you are not going to take care of your HIV.
Yeah, and we always talk about stigma within the field of HIV, like as if there's something wrong with the person. We take for granted the fact that there are very legitimate reasons not to be comfortable with services that are supposed to be rehabilitative.
When people hear about the laws that are on the books for the state of Missouri, they are mortified, because the laws were, I feel, created in panic, and they do not match the science at all. You know, science has developed further than these laws. You can spit on somebody and you can go to jail for a long time. And then the person who is HIV positive is faced with that burden of proof. They have to prove that they told somebody that what their status was, and that's ridiculous. It also causes people to not want to not even say that they're positive. And again, all my thoughts go back to Black people when they were we were three-fifths of a man. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't count. And that's the way I feel like a lot of these laws have discounted a lot of people who are HIV positive.
It is, because we are among the most marginalized people. We're the people that are not always heard from, the people who are not reached out to. And also, many people living with HIV live intersectional lives. We're not only people of color, but we're also queer, or we're also women, or people whose voices are silenced in a lot of these agencies. Something else I've recognized is that the very same factors that put me at risk for HIV are the same barriers that I have to navigate on a local agency level. They're the same hoops. They're the exact same hoops that I have to jump through.
That was Devin Hersey and Janice Evans speaking about some of the ways HIV impacts communities of color at a higher rate. That's it for this week's Missouri Health Talks, which was reported and produced by Landon Jones. Tune in next week for more conversations from throughout the state about health and access. I'm Rebecca Smith. Thanks for listening. Hey, it's Rebecca Smith from the KBIA Newsroom in Columbia, and it's time for Missouri Health Talks, a project where we listen in on Missourians' conversations about access to healthcare. This week we hear from Gretchen Mowney and Deanna Quietwater Noriega here in Columbia. Gretchen's actually a friend of mine. Gretchen and Deanna are both blind and spoke about the first time they met, now many years ago, at a support group. Here's Gretchen.
In 2006, I went blind, and it was obviously not an easy adjustment. And so I was working on relearning how to do a lot of things and doing blind rehab. Sometimes I just tell people I went to rehab. and I was kind of still like, I mean, not that I don't get angry now about stuff, but I was like just kind of going through like life sucks a lot back then. And I was still spending time on campus a lot. And I'd heard from this other blind guy on campus who happened to be like a CA at the time, or RA, CA, I think we call them CAs here, that there was going to be a blind support group starting up and that I should come. And I was all like, whatever, I don't need that. And I decided to go and just to see what it was like, and didn't have to stay. So I was there, still very broody.
You were across the room from me.
Yeah.
I remember. And the thing that struck me was there was so much tension in your voice when you talked. You were saying the right things, but the tone of your voice wasn't matching your words. You were very upbeat, presenting yourself well, but there was this strain underlying what you were saying. So when the meeting ended, you had mentioned that you were vaguely thinking about getting a guide dog. So I walked over to you with my guide dog at the time, who was a big black German Shepherd male, and he kind of intimidated people when they looked at him. But I brought him over to you and I said, hi, I have my guide dog here. Would you like to pet him? And I normally didn't do that, but I knew it was perfectly fine with Olson, because normally if someone tried to pet him, he would just stand there very stolid with his ears very erect and stare off into space like, I don't see you. I'm working. And so when you reached your hand out and touched his head, he did something unusual. He put his head down in your lap.
And I just started crying. I always grew up with dogs, and I hadn't gotten to be around a dog in a long time, but I'd always had a connection with them and felt good with them. But also, I hadn't met another. I'd heard Deanna talk during the meeting, because this was at the end of it, and she sounded so calm and kind and nice. And to have someone come over to me, and I knew you weren't supposed to pet guide dogs, but to just offer, because I wasn't going to go ask. And this dog just put his head right in my lap, and I put my hands on his head, and he didn't move, and he had these big, funny, awesome pointing ears, and I just started crying so hard.
Yeah, and then you said something that was not an easy thing to ask, but you asked, when will I stop being afraid? And that's when I hugged you, and I said, it's different for everybody. It will come, but it takes time.
That was Deanna Quietwater Noriega and Gretchen Mowney speaking about the first time they met at a support group for people who are blind. That's it for this week's Missouri Health Talks. Tune in next week for more conversations from throughout the state about health and access. I'm Rebecca Smith. Thanks for listening. Hey, it's Rebecca Smith from the KBIA Newsroom in Columbia, and it's time for Missouri Health Talks, a project where we listen in on Missourians' conversations about access to healthcare. This week we hear from Verna LaBoy and Annabelle Simmons from Live Well by Faith, a community health program that targets chronic disease among African Americans in Boone County through black churches. Verna has run Live Well by Faith since the program was established in 2016, and Annabelle is a health lifestyle coach at St. Luke United Methodist Church here in town. They spoke about how they are addressing racial health disparities through the church community. Here's Verna.
I don't like events because you have a health fair and you just check that off your list and it's done and they put everything away and there's no behavior modifications, there's no lifestyle changes, there's no transformations, nothing. We needed to get public health evidence-based programs inside the black church led by their own leadership. What we do is I go after the pastors. The pastors usually say, hey, I ain't got time to talk to you, girl. Talk to Miss Annabelle. She's the healthy person in the congregation. Talk to her. So I go after people like Miss Annabelle, who are leaders in their churches already and can draw a crowd, can pull their congregation together around this issue of health, which here in Boone County, for African Americans, it's dire.
When Verna came and talked to us, and he said, and she's the one that's going to be leading this. So I was like, oh, really? So I said, okay, I'll be the health lifestyle coach. We had to go to the training and learn how to use the blood pressure machine. We had to learn what you're looking for on the BMI charts. They taught me, and then I had to teach my congregation about these programs. Everybody had to fill out a form and get their BMI done and their blood pressure taken, and they got used to it. At first, they were like, do you have to take my blood pressure? No, it's up to you. Would you like me to take your blood pressure? So now they're used to me being available to take their blood pressure before and after church.
Data collection, monitoring blood pressure, is very important. African Americans in Boone County are dying from complications from diabetes at a rate of 3 to 1 with their white counterparts and 2 to 1 with hypertension. It's critical. And getting this population to understand they have power. They have power to make a difference in their own lives. Case in point, I was 250 pounds when I started this job. I was one of the people in the targeted population. I needed help. I was on the fast track to type 2 diabetes. I changed it. I'm down 50 pounds. Diabetes might have been in my past, you know, with grandparents. I've lost family members from diabetes, but I refuse to leave that legacy for my grandchildren.
That was Verna LaBoy and Annabelle Simmons discussing their efforts to promote long-term health in Black church congregations. That's it for this week's Missouri Health Talks, which was reported and produced by Zia Kelly. Tune in next week for more conversations from throughout the state about health and access. I'm Rebecca Smith. Thanks for listening. Hey, it's Rebecca Smith from the KBIA Newsroom in Columbia, and it's time for Missouri Health Talks, a project where we listen in on Missourians' conversations about access to healthcare. This week we hear from Lori Hines and Ted Glasgow, who've been together for many years. Ted is an accomplished bodybuilder, a 6-time Mr. Missouri, but a few years ago he experienced kidney failure. They reflect on their experiences and give some advice to others facing dialysis and organ transplants. Here's Ted.
Life is going to change pretty dramatically, but with proper management, it can still be productive. So it's not like it's going to be continuous torture from now on, but there's going to be some times when, you know, you're going to question, you know, is this worth it or not? So I would tell them to be prepared, to mentally prepare as much as possible, take time, meditate, think about what you're going through, what your body's going through. Prepare yourself mentally as much as possible. Your physical, you can't handle it. You can't really control that a lot. You know, control with diet a little bit, but it's the mental. That's the real, what really needs to be worked on before entering into dialysis or even into transplant. I remember I'd just been going to dialysis for about 2 weeks. And I went in this is when I was doing the morning dialysis. And I went in one morning, and there were, I think, 8 people hooked up. And before the session was over, they'd taken 3 of them out on stretchers. And I was kind of thinking, whoa, this is your life right now. But so mentally, it can be very overwhelming if you let it, you know. So you have to prepare yourself mentally that this is going to be a big challenge, and you better be ready to deal with it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think we saw so much situational and chronic depression
right.
Dialysis. When we look at the chair to the left and the chair to the right, we look at the people in them, and they were all lovely, amazing people who became our friends. But there was just this deep underlying sadness and,
right. Yeah.
And depression.
Yes. And, yeah, there wasn't. Nobody told a lot of jokes in dialysis, let's put it that way.
Although we tried to have fun.
We did. We had a Super Bowl party. We had a Valentine's Day party. I mean, we tried to, and that's the key too, is even though your life is going to change completely 160 degrees, you know, still, you know, try to figure out the things that really bring you enjoyment and focus on those things. You know, because there's going to be enough pain and suffering to go around. So you got to find those things that you find enjoyable and just focus on them. So with me, it was spending time with you, Lori.
That was Lori Hines and Ted Glasgow reflecting on their experiences with dialysis. Ted was on dialysis for several years, but now Lori is a living kidney donor and the director of the Missouri Kidney Program. And Ted is 2.5 years post-transplant. That's it for this week's Missouri Health Talks. Tune in next week for more conversations from throughout the state about health and access. I'm Rebecca Smith. Thanks for listening.